this team that's currently out there with Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, they are going to win. They are going to. I don't care what 26 games tells us. I care what 8 years tells us. Seven in a row in the ALCS.
Fly ball onto the track. At the wall. It's gone. Home run.
Turns on a ball. Deep right field. Oh, God.
What a game. What a moment. What is up, my friends? Welcome into Flippin' Bats, where we have a lot to talk about today. We got making a statement coming up. Some exciting news out of Major League Baseball for an upcoming weekend. We'll talk about that. But who should be the NL Rookie of the Year front runner? Should the Blue Jays be worried about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? The White Sox. That's all we got to say about the White Sox for now. This week in Shohei Ohtani news, we have named that team back. What's going on with the Astros? There's a lot to talk about in baseball, and we pride ourselves on talking about all of it. So, Alex, we're going to talk about all of it today.
Yeah. How are you doing after your brother's outing?
Yeah, he threw well.
Yeah.
They lost.
We'll dive into that.
Yeah, he threw in well. It's been good to see him. We'll talk about it in a little while, but it's been good to see him back on the mound pitching.
Yeah.
Pitching well.
So yeah. No, good. He definitely is. You know what else is back? Your brother was back.
Yeah.
But Players Weekend is back, you guys, in Major League Baseball. And we haven't had this since 2019. And this was one of the pre-COVID most fun weekends, I think, for players and fans and everybody involved. So it's back August 16th through 18th, leading up to the Little League Classic.
I love it. I am really glad it's back. It's always been fun seeing, you know, we would see players with different bats. Remember when they did the Little League Classic and guys would go up with the pencil bats?
Oh my gosh.
So they're going to be allowed to use whatever bats they want. The Little League Classic is going to be a part of it again.
Mm-hmm.
One of the games that's featured, I believe it's the Fox game, is a Dodgers game. I believe that's on the 16th. So it's just a fun weekend. They're going to do it's a little different this time, a little bit revamped, but it's cool to see it back. It's cool to see the players' personalities involved. And as MLB said, it's part of their efforts to promote players, but also part of their effort to reach younger fans. So I'm excited for it. I've always loved it. I've loved watching it. I've loved seeing guys do whatever they want with the bats. And
I will be honest. One of my favorite parts about it, though, isn't back. And that's the nicknames on the back of the jersey. Like, that was hilarious. We got some epic emoji nicknames, like different things. So that's the only thing that we're not getting this weekend. Okay, so why?
I asked a rep at MLB why, because we were talking about Players Weekend, and I got a graphic to share when it was first announced and put out all that information. And I did follow up saying, hey, just out of curiosity, why aren't the nicknames back? People seem to be excited Players Weekend is coming back. But the one comment I keep seeing is, well, why no nicknames? So I asked, why no nicknames?
Yeah.
And here's what I was told. We wanted to put a different focus on the event and bringing it back and really concentrate more on deeper storytelling about the players' personalities, charitable causes, and the people that helped them get there, as opposed to just the nicknames. So,
because they stole the show.
They did.
they stole the show, let's be honest. There were a couple edgy nicknames.
So, Yeah, there were. I am excited it's back. Yeah. And as MLB said, it's to promote the players, but also an effort to reach younger fans. And MLB also shared with me some stats about how their overall efforts across youth participation, marketing, events, social media, and all that stuff have resulted in MLB getting a younger fan base, which is something that I know Alex and I are both passionate about. It's kind of bringing a younger voice to the game and just getting the audience to hopefully become younger.
Well, making baseball fun again.
Younger.
Like, that's what it is. Because the older generation, it was very like, stick to the basics. This is
put
like,
your head down.
You can't change anything. Don't flip your bats. Don't have fun. Don't show flair.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, because we obviously haven't had this since 2019. Since then, we have seen so much more player personality, so much more flair. Yeah. So it's the perfect time for this weekend to come back.
They're doing their part on the field.
Yeah.
I think it's time the media and everybody does their part in showcasing the game and making it a little bit younger. And these numbers are pretty cool. The median age of a ticket purchaser has dropped 6 years since 2019, from 51 years old to 45. That's percentage great. Of ticket buyers ages 18 to 35 has increased 9.8% in the last 4 years. 86% of people ages 18 to 24 and 25 to 34 said they are more likely to watch MLB games due to the rule changes.
Oh, yeah.
Since 2015, when MLB introduced the Play Ball program, overall participation in baseball has increased by 13%. Mm. And now baseball is the number one team sport in boys 6 to 12 years old. So these efforts are working, and the proof is in the numbers. So yes, Players Weekend is about the players and being able to show off their personalities and be able to use different bats and stuff like that, and for the fans to be able to see things as well. But a big part of it is part of MLB's effort to reach younger fans and a younger fan base. And those efforts have been working.
It has been. They've really stepped up their social media game. Yes. As we all know, we're a social media show. This is what it's all about. This is how you're going to connect to that younger generation.
Do you follow MLB on TikTok?
Yes, but what?
Whoever just took over, they do an incredible job. It is hysterical. Shout out MLB.
But that's TikTok. What it's about. You got to bring great. The humor. You got to bring the ridiculousness, which leads us to the next thing we're going to talk about, because this went completely viral for all the right reasons, because it was absolutely insane. Umpires strike again in the worst way. Yeah. Aaron Boone was ejected from the game Monday because the umpire thought that he was yelling something when actually it was a fan in the stands yelling it. What?
That is,
how did this happen, and how was it allowed to stay this way? Like, it's unacceptable.
So here's my thing. And look, there was clearly, in my opinion, a conversation had before that game started of Hunter Wendelstedt behind home plate telling his umpiring crew, hey, this series has been a little chirpy. Mm-hmm. If I hear something around at anybody, I'm going to stick up and I'm going to throw out Aaron Boone, clearly. Mm-hmm. So fan in the front row sitting directly over Aaron Boone's shoulder yells at the home plate umpire. And if you really slow it down, he just yells at him basically saying, like, what was that home plate? Like, yelling at the home plate umpire. Yeah. Like, that was terrible. The home plate umpire, Hunter Wendelstedt, looks over at Aaron Boone and says, you're gone. If you're watching right now, if you're watching our show, you can see this, you can see the video happening. Aaron Boone said something right before this, and the umpire looked over and said, if you say another word, you're gone. Mm-hmm. So Aaron Boone puts his head down, is honestly like looking at his nails in the dugout. Yeah. You can see him. He's just like looking at his nails. Fan in the front row yells. Umpire turns to Aaron Boone and says, you're out of here. Aaron Boone freaks out, obviously, said, I didn't even say anything.
Yeah,
I wasn't saying anything. It was that guy pointed in the front row. And the umpire said, I don't care who it was. You're gone. I don't care where the voice was coming from. You're gone is what he said. So I just, It really frustrates me. Hunter Wendelstedt was, I've been asking for years for accountability from umpires. If something happens, you need to be able to talk after the game. And he was quoted after the game, and this is what he said. Apparently, this is from Hunter Wendelstedt. Apparently what he said was there was a fan right above the dugout. This isn't my first ejection. In the entirety of my career, I have never ejected a player or a manager for something a fan has said. I understand that's going to be part of a story.
That is the story.
So, okay, I have a lot to say here. First off, I don't care if you've never done it in your career. You just did it for the first time.
Yeah.
This is just a bunch of word jumble. He could have said anything, but it was right in front of him. He said absolutely everything, but I messed up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Everything but that. Nobody cares if you've done it before in your career. Nobody cares why you were throwing out Aaron Boone. He said he's the voice for everybody in the dugout. Well, he's not the voice for the person in the first row of the stands. So here's my thing. We have replay.
Yeah.
We have the ability to replay anything that's happening. Why are we gatekeeping replay? Because it's not in the rules to be able to replay that. It's also not in the rules stating you can't replay something that the fan in the front row said, because what if he actually said it and not the manager? Nobody in a million years assumed this would come. So why not just say, hey, let's go check the tape here. Aaron, if you said a single word after I told you not to, we're throwing you out. But if it really was the fan in the front row, then we will backtrack. But the problem with backtracking is it's umpires admitting wrongdoing and their ego gets in the way of that. They will never do that. He could have gone in the locker room after, watched a video and said, oh man, that was the fan in the front row. I have to answer to this now. And he came out and said, well, I've never done that in my career. I didn't do that.
My first thought is like, in this situation, just because it's so rare, we've never seen it before, challenge an ejection. I know you can't, and I know it's never been done, but we've also never seen this before where a fan is a reason that a manager gets ejected. And that's a big deal. That's a big deal not to have your manager there in the dugout for the entirety of the game. This was at the beginning of the game.
It was five pitches in.
Yeah, it was insane. It was like the very beginning of the day. I just don't understand how you don't get on the phone with New York and you're like, can we get this straightened out? Like, this needs to be challenged. Like, this needs to be like somehow taken care of because this is ridiculous.
The best quote was, he said, I don't care who said it.
Of course he doesn't.
Unbelievable. So Hunter Wendelstadt throws out Aaron Boone. You know, Saturday with Smoltz coming up. I already talked to Smoltz for the Saturday episode, and I don't even know properly how to explain this without spoiling it. But John Smoltz, I asked him the worst ejection that ever happened in his career.
Yeah.
And let's just say there might be some familiarity with the umpire that was involved with his most ridiculous and worst ejection that ever happened in his career.
Gosh,
and the second we both realized that, the look on our faces was oh my God.
Yeah.
So Saturday with Smoltz coming up soon. You will not want to miss that. But let's just get it right. Like, come on.
Yeah.
That can't happen. Can't happen.
You know who else needs to get things right, Ben?
I do.
It is time to start panicking about the Astros. I know you don't want to admit it, but they started the season 7-19.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, this is bad. The last team to have this kind of start and make the playoffs, 1914 Boston Braves.
Yeah, this is bad.
This is bad.
Yeah. 7-19 after they lose on Thursday. The worst start they've had in a long, long time. As you said, 7-19. Last team to start 7-19 or worse and make the playoffs, the 1914 Boston Braves. That is a long time ago. That is 110 years ago. So I've sat here for weeks in a row now, beating the same drum. It's early. The Astros will make the playoffs. They will be fine. And I'm not veering from that. I am not going to sit here and say that this is a pretty start to the year, that they've made it harder for themselves. All that is true. It is an abysmal start. And they have dug themselves quite a hole. And I'm watching games the last time the Astros won a game was Justin's last start.
Oof.
Justin pitched on Thursday. Pitched well, came out of the game with the lead. Astros end up losing that game.
Yeah.
But the last time the Astros won, they haven't pitched since his prior start on Friday.
Mm.
Listen to these names of starting pitchers from this last start on Thursday, dating back to Justin's last start. Spencer Arrighetti. He has a 10.97 ERA. Spencer Arrighetti threw the game prior to Thursday. JP France, 7.46 ERA. Hunter Brown has a 9.68 ERA, and Ronel Blanco. So Ronel Blanco has been the best of the bunch, by the way. And Hunter Brown is supposed to be a guy in this rotation and needs to be better. But you can't win in Major League Baseball trotting out every fifth day Spencer Arrighetti, JP France, Hunter Brown, and Ronel Blanco. You just can't. This rotation isn't able to hold up like that. The Astros get back Framber Valdez over the weekend. Unfortunately for him, he has to pitch in that Mexico series where balls are going to be flying 600
Ooh.
Feet. But they do get him back.
Ooh.
So then you have Justin and Framber back at the top of the rotation. But right now, you have a rotation without Framber Valdez, for a lot of the season, without Justin, without Framber, without Christian Javier, without Lance McCullers, without Jose Urquidy. So what's supposed to happen? I mean, the offense is not everybody's firing on all cylinders, but Jose Altuve's killing it at the top of the lineup. Kyle Tucker and Yordan have been good. Bregman's had a struggling start to the year, but the offense has been good. It's this rotation. You can't You can't win with this rotation. And you can get Ronel Blanco's been great, but you're then counting on three of the guys. I'm going to exclude Hunter Brown because he's not pitched well, but he should be a guy. And as we're talking right now, mm-hmm. JP France gets optioned to AAA. So yep. It's like you're just searching for question marks in this rotation. What are you supposed to do? You're trotting out Spencer Arrighetti every fifth day, who, no offense to him, he's just started in the big leagues, but you got a 10.97 ERA. It's like, what are you supposed to do? So they got to get their rotation back. You get mm-hmm. Justin back. He's been really, both of his starts, he's been solid. Good, giving the team a chance to win. Yeah. Did win the first one. They blew the lead in the second one on Thursday. Framber's coming back. But there's just so many question marks in the rotation. It becomes, well, how are you even supposed to win with a rotation like this? And then you put on top of that that the bullpen hasn't been very good either. So just an abysmal start to the year, a terrible hole they've put themselves in. But I'm going to continue to say, look, it's April 26th. It's April 26th. What? There's 130 games left. I'll say it here. I've been saying it for years. I'll say it when the Astros are 7-19. The Astros are inevitable. They'll be fine.
I don't know how you can say that right now with the start that you just saw. They're in last place in the AL West behind the Oakland A's. They're 2-8 in their last 10 games. The pitching is their Achilles heel, from the starting rotation to relief. Like there is no, until you start to see consistency and the Astros of the old and have them winning games collectively as they have the last decade, I don't think you can say they're inevitable right now.
The consistency comes over the last 8 years. That's consistency, not a span of 26 games. How about a span of 7 years? That shows that this team that's currently out there with Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Yordan Alvarez, Cal Tucker, Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, they are going to win. They are going to. I don't care what 26 games tells us. I care what 8 years tells us. 7 in a row in the ALCS.
What about 110 years where the last team to have this kind of start and make the playoffs were in 1914, the Boston Braves? What about that?
Alex, we're talking about 26 games. 26. There's 162.
The only other time that a team has had this kind of start and made the postseason was in 1914. That's a big deal.
Can you tell me the only other time a team in Major League Baseball history has made 7 straight ALCS appearances? Never. They're the only team.
They didn't have this kind of start, though.
But my point is, I'm not going to worry about 26 games. They look awful. They're not fun to watch.
No.
They're brutal to watch. Okay. But I will take the span of 7 years, and you want to say that it's not possible because the only other team to do this was in 1914. Well, the only
history.
Team that's gone to as many consecutive ALCS appearances as the Astros have is nobody else. They're the only team to do that, and it's largely this team that is currently out there. There is no reason to look at that offense and say, yep, they're uh-huh. not going to be good this year, or to look at that roster and say they're not going to be good this year. 26 games in, it's a brutal record.
Okay, we'll check in
162
weeks.
Games in, they will be in the playoffs.
Okay. We'll see.
Yeah.
Let's move on to making a statement. If you're new to this segment, I'm going to give Ben a strong statement. He's going to agree or disagree with it. So let's get started with our first statement. Jared Jones is the NL Rookie of the Year frontrunner.
Jared Jones has been great for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Best pitcher in that rotation. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I just get excited. Jared Jones and Paul Skenes could be one of the best 1-2 punches in baseball. Unfortunately, one of them's not in the major leagues, but Jared Jones.
Dude, Jared Jones is like breaking knees and ankles.
2.79 ERA, 39 punch outs already. 0.83 whip. He is throwing back foot sliders to lefties that are literally like hitting them in the back foot, and they're swinging and falling down.
Yeah.
He's third in Major League Baseball in strikeouts and has a start less
yeah.
than the guys
oh,
above
there's
him.
The breaking knees and ankles,
so
if you're watching.
He's been a lot of fun to watch. A name that I don't think many people came into this year saying was going to win the NL Rookie of the Year. But for this making a statement, oh, man, he's made it close. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say right now that he's not the front runner.
Oh, who's your front runner?
I'm going to still take Jackson Merrill.
Okay.
My guy.
All right.
I mean, He's hitting .318 on the year.
Yeah.
.787 OPS, got 4 stolen bases already, had that one homer early on in the year. 12 RBIs. You got a rookie hitting .318?
That's great.
When he and his .378 on base percentage in his first about 30 games in the big leagues.
Yeah.
I mean, those numbers scream rookie of the year number. Both of them do.
Yeah.
Jer Jones has been great. Jackson Merrill's been great for that lineup, so I don't know. I'm just going to stick with Jackson Merrill because that was what, I've been saying it all. Yeah, that was from the beginning of the year. And right now, maybe it's a toss-up.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Jackson Merrill has done absolutely nothing other than make me feel even more confident about what I said at the beginning of the year about him. But shout out Jaron Jones. He's been unbelievable. 2.79 ERA, third in baseball in strikeouts, and with a start less than those other guys. So fantastic.
He made history already, becoming the fourth pitcher since 1893 to record 7+ strikeouts in each of his first 5 career games. Like, that's
pretty good.
It's pretty good. But let's move on to our next statement. A little different of a tone. It's time to worry about Vladdy Jr.
It ain't time to worry about Vladdy Jr. I've been worried about Vladdy Jr. since 2022, the year following his second place MVP performance, because he's been good, not elite.
Yeah.
And he won his ARB case, meaning he's getting paid $19.9 million this year. He's getting closer and closer to free agency, and the Blue Jays are going to have a decision on their hands, because what I see out of Vladdy Jr. right now, and let's talk right now. Of course, I'm really worried about him right now. He's hitting .219 with a .674 OPS on the year. He's got 3 homers and 9 RBIs on the season. But for me, the physical isn't there right now. His numbers he's putting up aren't great, but I see a lack of the mental side of things just out in the field. I think maybe his offense is carrying over to the field, but there was a routine ground ball in the infield the other day that was thrown right to his chest, and he just whiffed on it at first base. Clanked off his glove, just completely, here it is here. Left-handed batter, hits the ball to the third baseman. Great throw, tough play for the third baseman. Great throw to first base.
Weird.
And he just missed it. It was right at him. He just missed it, hit off his glove, and went up the first baseline. 2 runs scored, and that cost them the game. They were winning 2-1. They lost that game. They lost that game because of that. So these numbers make me worry, but on a larger scale, like I said, I've been worried about Vladdy Jr. since 2022, and I know 2022, 2023, he was an all-star, but I expect more out of him. And this year has been awful. He's been averaging his average numbers .270 with 30 doubles and 24 homers. So my point being, those are good numbers. They're not elite numbers. They're not numbers where you shouldn't build your franchise around a guy like that. And Vladdy Jr. is a guy that you're hoping you can build a franchise around. He had all the hype in the world. He came up and he had that one year in 2021 where if it wasn't for Shohei Ohtani, he's winning the MVP award and he was close to a triple crown. But outside of that year, 2019, 2022, 2023, he's averaging .270 with 24 homers, 30 doubles, and 87 RBIs. That's a good Major League Baseball player. It is not great, and it's not a guy you pay $300 million, because I'll tell you who his comps are. His comparisons with those numbers since 2020 are Jose Abreu, Josh Bell, CJ Cron, and Ryan Mountcastle.
Whoa.
That's with his average numbers outside of that 2021 season.
Whoa.
And now let's do his comparison since 2022.
Okay.
So Vladdy's numbers in 2022 and 2023, who he compares to. Nate Lowe, Josh Naylor, Ryan Mountcastle, Paul Goldschmidt. Again, good baseball players.
Yeah.
But not the elite of the elite. And Vladdy is getting paid to be the elite of the elite. And the Toronto Blue Jays need him to be that guy. That lineup needs him to be elite Vladdy Guerrero Jr., and he's not that guy. So I have been worried about him since that 2021 year when I've seen his play since. It's good. It's not great. So I would say I would say, yeah, it has been time to worry about Vladdy Jr.
It's also hard when you think about to 2023 and it's like, oh, what was a highlight for Vladdy Jr.? Winning the home run derby, which doesn't do anything for your team and the future of your team, right? Yeah. That's like a fun weekend situation. So, I mean, the Blue Jays have a couple big contracts on the horizon, and they really need to figure out what their future is going to look like, because they have Bo Bichette and Vladdy Jr. both becoming free agents in 2026. So you have to ask yourself, is he someone that you believe you can move forward in this organization with this team right now and build around both these guys? Can you pay both of these guys?
Yeah. Well, if this $19.9 million a year he's getting right now, it's unacceptable. And that's not a guy you're going to, the money he's going to want is not the money that you're going to want to give him, because since September of 2022, of all first basemen, he has the eighth lowest F WAR, the eighth lowest of guys with a minimum of 800 ABs. That is bad. That's bad.
Well, it's especially bad when you're getting paid elite money. That's where this becomes a talking point. Yeah. When you're supposed to be the guy, you're getting paid to be the guy, and you're not showing up as the guy.
Yep.
Can't do it. All right, moving on to our final statement here. The White Sox will break the record for the most losses in a season.
Oh, boy.
The White Sox,
I'm going to say yes. The Chicago White Sox are 3-22. I'm gonna get heated through this. I just know I am. The Chicago White Sox are 3-22 after losing on Thursday. That is on pace. I did the math. They are on pace to go 19-143.
Whoa.
19-143. The record that we're talking about is 120 losses. I am going to say yes, that they break that record. This is the worst team of all time. This is the worst team of my lifetime.
It's embarrassing.
They have failed to score more than one run in half of their games this season. They're the only team to ever get shut out 7+ times in a team's first 19 games. The only team ever. They are 1 out of 2,692 teams in baseball history with that stat. They can't hit. They can't pitch. Jay Cuda on Instagram or on Twitter talking about the Chicago White Sox offense. They're hitting 192 on the year with an OPS of 556. They compare to 35-year-old John Lester, noted pitcher, at the plate. In 2019, John Lester hit 188 with a 556 OPS, the same OPS that the Chicago White Sox have. Tom Glavine, the Mets, so we're talking in his 40s, Tom Glavine had a better batting average than the Chicago White Sox do this season. How do you not say that this team is going to break the record? It's wild. The Orioles have hit 35 home runs in their first 22 games. They hit 35 homers. The White Sox have 45 runs in their first 22 games. So what we're talking about here is the team on the field being incapable of putting up numbers and incapable of winning. But my frustration isn't with the team on the field. We can talk about their numbers. We can talk about the offense. We can talk about the pitching and everything they have at every position. I'm not interested in that. I honestly feel bad for the guys that have to get run out there every day and just get their brains beat in because they're not good enough. And they were never good enough. And the problem starts at the top, with Jerry Reinsdorf at the very top, and then Chris Getz right under him as the GM of this team, who on August 31st of 2023, so middle end of last year, from this day forward, our organization will do whatever is necessary to be better in 2024. Well, they're on pace to be the worst team of all time in 2024. So what exactly did you do to get better heading into 2024? What exactly did you do? These numbers in 2024, they rank 30th in runs, 30th in run differential, 30th in hits, 30th in homers, 30th in batting average, 30th in on-base percentage, 30th in slugging, and 30th in win-loss percentage. Last time I checked, there were 30 teams in Major League Baseball. You wanted to get better in 2024. Well, how'd you expect to do that putting a worse team out there? It's ridiculous what is happening. And he put together a front office of his friends. That's what pisses me off the most. There was no interview process. There was no real consideration as to who he was going to pick. Instead of actually interviewing the best candidates for the job and the task at hand, he went out and just hired his personal friends from the Kansas City Royals organization. Paul Janisch, director of player development for the Chicago White Sox, was there with the Royals with Chris Getz. Gene Watson, director of player personnel, was with him with the Royals. Brian Bannister, senior pitching advisor, was with him with the Royals. Pedro Grifol, the manager, was with him at the Royals. Everyone that he has hired and put into place are friends of his. That's what pisses me off the most. From Jerry Reinsdorf to Chris Getz and everybody he hired, it's all this group that's getting together as a bunch of friends that are saying, wouldn't it be fun if we had control of this baseball team together and we would all be friends and we could go out and drink after and laugh about how bad our team sucks. God, unbelievable. They're so bad. And I don't care. I don't care about the players on the field and their underperformance because they were set up in a situation to fail. That's what pisses me off the most. I have friends on that team. This is their livelihood and their careers. And they were put in a position to fail. And that affects their careers. You think these guys care? You think they care when they lose a game? I guarantee you they don't. I guarantee you they're going to eat at the nicest restaurant in Chicago or whatever city they're in and drinking a beer and having fun together because they're all friends. Yay, friends. God.
Yeah, we knew this was going to be bad. But are we surprised, right? After hearing all the behind the scenes, bad culture conversation that came out last season, we heard players come forward, right? You kind of expected this. I don't know if I expected it to be this bad because this is just flat out embarrassing, but it's hard to be surprised with how the season is going for the White Sox. Just once you hear the players talk about how bad the culture is, people don't show up for things, people don't enforce training, people don't show up on time for things, like that right there, you just know, obviously yeah. From the top, as you're talking about, all the way to the bottom. But when the bottom is that bad too, and when we say bottom, we mean that like it's just the players, the teams, they're not the one controlling everything. There's no way that it's going to improve in any way, shape, or form yeah. if there isn't some culture, belief, consistency, having fun while you're playing. I mean, we have a couple of these right now, right? What franchise are you more disappointed in? The Oakland A's or the Chicago White Sox? Because these are two that are like similar frustration going on at the top that's really affecting the players on the field and the product
on
the field.
At least the A's trot out Mason Miller every few days so we can watch somebody throw 104. And at least they're playing a little better than we thought. Am I surprised the White Sox are bad? No. But I can't say that I'm not surprised that they are on pace to go 19 and 143. I do have to ask our producer Logan's a massive White Sox fan. I don't know how thrilled he is right now. Looks like he's a little.
Looks like he's ignoring you because you're talking about the White Sox and he's just been living in.
Yeah.
But living in the shame and the guilt of being a Sox fan right now.
I am going to say that the Chicago White Sox break the worst record all time. Yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah, okay, let's switch it up and let's talk about some happy things. And the favorite segment on the show on Fridays, Ben.
Oh, yeah, it is time for my favorite segment of all time this week in Shohei Ohtani news. We're going to talk about his historic home run over the course of the last week and his historic start to the 2024 season mm-hmm. with his new team. Because it is it's on an unprecedented pace. But let's start with that historic homer. Passed Hideki Matsui for most Major League Baseball home runs by a Japanese-born player over the past week. Did it in a fraction of the time in the big leagues. But congrats to Shohei for the milestone homer. We knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. It was a matter of when, not if. But this is big. I mean, Shohei is still young. just in his prime, and we're already talking about him breaking the record for most homers by a Japanese-born player in Major League Baseball. This is awesome to see. Hideki Matsui is an all-time great, a legend out of Japan. Still does a lot for, you know, stuck around the Yankees organization for a long time, doing things with them and helping them. I always remember when we used to play the Yankees organization and Staten Island, and he would always be out there. Like, Hideki Matsui is an absolute legend, and for Shohei to pass him by the time before he's 30 years old is remarkable, and just makes me excited for what's to come in the future. But I don't want to gloss over we know about the home run total, but this is a cool milestone to pass Hideki Matsui. That is really cool.
I think the coolest part was seeing how much it meant to Ohtani, because that was one of the biggest smiles I've ever seen on Shohei Ohtani's face in that moment, rounding the bases, coming back into the dugout. Like, you can tell how much it means to him to be that guy representing Japan. But then he also made a funny comment after the game that his next big goal is to pass his manager, Dave Roberts, all-time Dodgers home run record. He's one away from tying him. He's at 6. I think Dave Roberts was at 7.
Who is also a Japanese-born baseball player. So, I think that one's a matter of when, not if.
Any day now.
Any day now, because he hit 6. We just saw the video if you're watching. He hit number 6 over the past week, which was absolutely crushed. He hit it 118.7 miles an hour.
I mean, his exit velo this week has been absolutely insane.
He averaged over 100 mile an hour exit velocity over the past week. So his numbers.
Yeah.
His numbers for since the last time we did This Week in Ohtani News. He hit .421. Mm-hmm. He had 2 homers. He had 6 RBIs, .560 on base percentage, an OPS of 1,500.
No big deal.
1507.
No big deal.
OPS. This guy is so locked in right now. In my opinion, he is the best hitter in the game of baseball. You watch him go about his business at the plate. He's the best hitter in the game of baseball. I tweeted that the other day. I was watching him, and every time it was a game against the Nationals, every time he came up to the plate, you just knew something was going to be hit hard somewhere because he was so locked in. And the one out he had in the game, I believe he hit it to the warning track, and that was the least hard ball least hardest ball he hit all game. So he is extremely locked in. Might I remind you guys that we're talking a 2-time unanimous MVP winner, and he is off to his best ever start as a hitter through 26 games. Extra base hits, he has 21. That's the most ever. Hits, 39. The most for him. Batting average, .371. That is the highest. Runs scored, 21. That's the most runs scored for him through his first 26 games. Total bases, 73. The most. On base percentage, .433. The best. Slugging, .695. The best. OPS, .128. The best. Every single category is the best in his career through the first 26 games of a season. And those extra base hits, first 26 games with at least 20, as many extra base hits as he has. Listen to this list. Since 1901, okay, most extra base hits through 26 games. 1936, Joe DiMaggio, 23. 1926, Hack Wilson, 23. 2019, Bo Bichette, 22. 1925, Mandy Brooks, 22. And in 2024, Shohei Ohtani with 21 extra base hits through 26 games. I've never seen anything like this. The power, the average, the OPS, the exit velocity. He's got the hardest hit ball in baseball this year. The hardest hit ball in StatCast history for the Dodgers. And oh, by the way, the third hardest hit ball in Dodgers history in the StatCast era. All in the first couple of weeks of his tenure with the team.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible. Shohei Ohtani is en fuego to start the season. There is no denying that. But I'm going to keep reminding everyone why this is so impressive. Because He had a major surgery this offseason that he's still rehabbing and recovering from to get back on the mound. He had a huge scandal happen off the field with his best friend. He is with a new team in a new city without his translator, who was kind of his security blanket. And with all of this going on, he is having the best start to a season in his career.
I tweeted about that new city and people loved calling me out for saying he's in a new city. Last time I checked, Anaheim, Los Angeles.
Well, so this is really tricky because when I worked for the Angels, they changed it to Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and we weren't allowed to say LA Angels or Anaheim, in the pre and post. You just don't say it, but it was like, it's a part of it. It's a really weird gray area.
Because
it's definitely not Los Angeles.
No.
It is clearly Orange County. You are right down the street from Disneyland. You're 40 minutes out of LA.
No. I just don't know if you saw the tweet.
Oh, no. Did you get gnarly hate?
It's basically the same thing. Oh, I always do, Alex. But one of the things I said, I was listening to a bunch of things. And I said, new city, new organization. You were like, new city, it's 45 minutes down the road. And it's like, Have you been to
Orange County?
I don't
And then
care.
Come up it's to LA? Still, it's different.
People totally missed the point. You know, it's like, people.
It's just new. It's a completely new environment.
Thank
it's a
you.
Big deal.
Thank you.
Really big deal. New yes. people, new coaches, new teammates. Who knows the living situation? But like, it's all new. While recovering from a major surgery, while being in one of the biggest scandals we've seen in baseball in a really long time, like it's insane that he's able to have these numbers and put up the best start of his MLB career with all of that going on.
It's been remarkable to watch. And the guy is hitting every single thing hard. And it's been a blast to watch. So congratulations to Shohei Ohtani for passing Hideki Matsui for most home runs in Major League Baseball for a Japanese-born player. And congratulations to Shohei Ohtani for a week where he hit .421
Dude.
With a 1,500 OPS, and he averaged over 100-mile-an-hour exit velo. So that does it for this week in Shohei Ohtani News.
Well, we're going to wrap things up bringing an old game back.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have some fun. Everyone loves this game when we post it on social. So we're back, baby, with Name That Team, infield edition. So basically, I'm going to share where each player got drafted out of, whether it's the high school state or the college or what country they signed out of.
Okay.
And that's all Ben gets. He has a minute to guess what team all these guys came out of.
It's been a little while since
we've
played
been a
this
while.
One, but all the pressure has come rushing back right to my heart. So, we'll see. Let's get a minute on the clock. And
okay.
We got three of them?
Yeah. All right. Minute is on the clock. Team one, behind the plate, Oregon State. First base, drafted out of high school in Florida. Second base, high school in Oklahoma. Shortstop, high school in Alabama. Third base, Mississippi State. Name that team.
I think this is the Orioles.
Final answer?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Oregon State. There was so many young guys on that team. It's tough to, you got Adley with Oregon State was the giveaway. And then Gunnar Henderson, we knew he was a high school, had him, high school guy out of Alabama. So
softballs.
Right. One for one.
Give me softballs. Ready for team number two?
Yes.
All right, let's get 1 minute on the clock. Team number two, behind the plate, high school out of Georgia, first base, Oklahoma State, second base, University of Florida, shortstop and third base, Dominican Republic.
Okay. So here's where I'm at.
Okay.
My first gut goes to...
Go with your guts.
The Reds. I'm unsure about CES. Encarnacion Strand. I did not know Oklahoma State, if that is him. But Jonathan India at second would make sense. Florida. Dominican at short. Dominican at third is
25
Ellie
seconds.
And Candelario, I believe. So I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Reds.
Yep. Okay. Two for two. Dude, unfazed over there.
Whew.
Unfazed. What
right.
nerves.
Two for two.
All right. Let's see if you can go perfect. Let's finish it up with team three. 1 minute on the clock. Let's clear the screen and we'll start behind the plate, Tulane. First base, Arizona State. Second base, high school out of Mississippi. Shortstop, Puerto Rico. Third base, Notre Dame. Name that team.
Oh, that's Spencer Torkelson, Javi Baez. This is the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah.
We did it.
The bene.
Three for three. We're back, baby.
First time back. Nailed it. Vibes are high. Things are good. You crushed it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm glad we're back. Name that team is fun. I love a good game.
I know.
I love a good game.
Games
in the show
are fun. It's a good way to end.
Especially with the passion and the negative fire I had to bring today. You know,
yeah.
What are you carrying?
Just keep going. Yo, I'm going to save it. Just go.
What do you have?
Do your close. Do your goodbye.
Okay, I don't even know what I was saying. Oh, with all the negativity, the White Sox are just pissing me off. But today was a fun episode. Make sure you're listening Saturday. Saturday with Smoltz is going to be fun. We do talk all about the craziest ejection he's ever seen. And a lot more there. So thank you all for listening. Make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever. You can also watch everything on Spotify. You can watch on YouTube and follow us on TikTok, where we want 100,000 followers. And we are getting closer and closer to that. So thank you all for listening. I don't know what Alex is doing with a baseball bat over there, but it looks like she's about to beat me with it.
No. Do your close.
But until next time, my friends, remember, find your bat and flip it. Peace.
Props, baby, props.